And welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of Nerds Talk Movies. I'm your host, Tristan Benz. Taylor's out. You know, he's really broken up about, you know, T'Challa's untimely demise in the MCU. So we gave him some time off, you know, some sabbatical to really, you know, come to terms with his feelings. But never fear, because I'm here. And you know who else is here? My good friend and fellow frequent co-host, Drew Garrison. Drew, how you doing today?
I am doing good. This movie, ooh, opened up some wounds.
It's a journey. It's a journey. That is for damn sure. But speaking of this movie, you all saw the title. You know how to read, I assume. If you don't, then, you know, it's never too late to learn.
Also, how did you get on our, how did you find our podcast if you can't
read? That's a good question, actually. If you can't read, like, were you just going by the thumbnails? Like, what was the, I'd say write in and tell us how you did it, but if you can't read, I don't know if you can write. Get someone to write in for you and tell us, you know, your thought process, because I'm very curious. But leave that, you know, for after this episode, because right now we have to talk about the one, the only Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, recently released on November 11th. Was a big deal, and I tell you what, this may be the first MCU movie to crack a billion in quite a while. It's doing numbers, Drew. It's doing numbers.
It's making the rounds.
It's making the rounds. It's almost like this thing's just printing vibranium. But let's just, you know, let's not dance around it too long, because we got a lot to talk about this movie. So let's just go ahead and get into the synopsis for Black Panther Wakanda Forever, courtesy of IMDb. Okay.
Yeah, hold on. Before we start, let's just dedicate this to the star who should have been at the head of this, Chadwick Boseman. Rest in peace, man. We know it's been like three years since your untimely demise, but we missed you, and the movie definitely does you justice, so just wanted to let that out there.
Well, there you go. I'll give a hard retweet on that. But as for IMDb's synopsis, the people of Wakanda fight to protect their home from intervening world powers as they mourn the death of King T'Challa. You know, we've talked before about not liking synopses that give everything away, and we've talked a lot about how IMDb really likes to bury the lead with a lot of their synopses and not really give anything away. And this is somewhere in the middle for me, where it's like, you know, I appreciate that they don't give away a lot, but also, it seems like you could go in a little bit more, you know, like maybe, I don't know, mention Namor or some undersea threat. I don't know. It just feels odd, because that's a pretty bland synopsis for this enjoyable film.
Yeah, and also, it feels weird to try and keep to keep Namor and Atlantis, even though they don't call it Atlantis, out of this, considering they're on the poster.
They are on the poster. They're very prominent in the marketing materials. We all knew, you know, who they're going up against. But, you know, that's a question for those suits in Washington. You know, we're just a couple of small town movie podcasters. So
for now,
they didn't ask us. But getting back on track, here's some of the main cast for the movie, as well as the director and the writing credits. Once again, from IMDb, your number one source for occasionally inaccurate information. So this movie was directed by Ryan Coogler, just like the first one. Coogler also worked on the screenplay, as did Joe Robert Cole. And Coogler himself is credited as creating the story. As for the cast, we got Letitia Wright as Shuri, Lupita Nyong'o as Nakia, Danai Gurira as Okoye, Winston Duke as M'Baku, Angela Bassett, the Queen!
The Queen!
Ramonda. Oh, man. She's... Side note, Angela Bassett, why does that woman not have an Oscar? She should have gotten an Oscar decades ago. She's incredible. Yeah. But...
And honestly, she stole the show for me in this movie, but we'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about that. Also, God, her arms are fantastic. She is just cut. Just shredded. Yoked out, dare I say. But I digress.
I thought I was the only one to notice that woman. It's like, I would have been...
I've always noticed her arms. They're incredible.
Yeah, it's like, I wouldn't have been surprised fantastic. If they made her the Black Panther. It's like, plot twist.
I mean,
it's
hey,
the mom.
I would have liked to have seen that. You know, just put Angela Bassett in any sort of action role and I'll be there. Then we've got, all right, now I've been practicing how to say this name, because I don't want to pull a Taylor. No offense, Taylor. I know you're going to be the one editing this, but you'll agree, not the best with names. Tenoch Huerta, I believe that's how it's pronounced, as Namor or Namor, as they say. And we've also got Martin Freeman as Everett Ross, Dominique Thorne as Riri Williams, Florence Kasumba as Io, Michaela Cole as Annika or Aneka, Alex Livinali as Atuma, and Mabel Cadena as Namora. So for once, the cast list on IMDb, these are all actually relevant characters. You know, normally we pull up the IMDb thing and, you know, a good half of the list is people that have one scene and make little more than a grunt. But these are all actually people who have an impact on the story. So let's start getting, you know, into the meat of this. So the first Black Panther came out 2018. Everyone loved it. Blew everyone's nips off. Made a shitload of money. We're like, we're clamoring for sequels. Let's go. You know, everyone fell in love with the world of Wakanda, and rightly so. It was a fantastic introduction to that corner of the Marvel Universe. They almost immediately start working on sequels. You know, the whole cast signs on to return. You got Ryan Coogler already, you know, completing drafts, turning them in. Then, unfortunately, Drew, as you mentioned, and as everybody under the sun knows, Chadwick Boseman unfortunately passed away in 2020, right after, I think, Ryan Coogler had turned in a draft for the film. They had every reason in the world to cancel this movie. You know, I don't think anybody would have blamed them for being like, you know what? No, like we can't do this without him. We would feel weird doing without him. But to the movie's credit, and to the credit of the creative forces behind it, you know, the cast, obviously Ryan Coogler, the whole production team, it was clear that this is something they really wanted to make, to honor, you know, their friend and family member. And I think that really shines through overall in this movie.
Yes, it does. They really do try to bring in the weight of T'Challa's absence, of Chadwick Boseman not being there. Honestly, the beginning and the ending scenes were just like the most powerful in the movie, just because of how real it is. All right, well,
hold on. We're not getting specifics yet. We're not getting specifics yet, but you are right on the money. You are right on the money. They do a lot to honor his legacy in this, and it's, you know, it's present in pretty much every scene, honestly. But we'll get to that a little bit later. So normally we have a, you know, a comic connection section with you and I, since we are the two comic guys on the podcast. So Drew, just off the top of your head, what were some of the major comic connections that you noticed while you were watching Black Panther: Wakanda Forever?
So the ones I noticed were, of course, Avengers versus X-Men, because that's where Namor flooded Wakanda. And I had his name in my head, but basically the Avengers World Run, where it was basically like before Secret Wars, because that's where the Illuminati and stuff happened. Where,
yeah, Hickman's Black Run. Panther... is that whose name you were looking for?
Huh?
Were you looking for Jonathan Hickman? Is that the yes. name you were?
Yes, Jonathan Hickman, literally my favorite writer in all of comic books, and I forget his name. So embarrassed.
Fake fan.
Don't call me fake. No, Jonathan Hickman, if you're listening, I really am a big fan. I literally have all of your Fantastic Four run and all of your X-Men run. I'm working on getting all of the Avengers run, but it is hard. That stuff goes fast. So the Illuminati stuff where Black Panther and Namor are fighting. And of course, during the run, also has Shuri becoming Black Panther. So, you know, got all of that in there. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head.
Okay. There's definitely a few I noticed with Okoye and Aneka or Annika. I'm just calling her Michaela Cole because I know the actress name, but you know, I can never remember how it's pronounced. But their whole becoming the Midnight Angels thing, the Midnight Angels were introduced in Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther run, and they got their own spinoff series, actually, which it seems like rumors that these two will be getting their own spinoff series for Disney Plus, but you know, we'll see if there's any truth to that. Yeah, everything you said, this movie pulls a lot from the Jonathan Hickman dynamic between Namor and just Wakanda in general, which makes it all the more bittersweet that Chadwick Boseman wasn't able to make this film, just because I think that would have been a really, really strong dynamic. But, like, I gotta say, the entire cast really stepped up and really were able to balance out that same dynamic just as strong as it is in the comics without T'Challa even being there. And I think that's a, like I said, a credit to the entire cast and crew. As for other comic connections, I mean, aside from Namor, you got the classic Atlanteans, Namora and Atuma. So it was nice to see them. We've got Namor. I think this is the first time that someone has spoken the word mutant in the MCU. In Ms. Marvel, they do say there's something mutated, and they play the X-Men theme, but they don't necessarily say, oh, I'm a mutant, which Namor does here.
Huh. I guess that is true, because I was about to say, yeah, you caught me on that one, because I was going to say, what about Ms. Marvel? Because
They say, oh, there's something in your genes, something... Yeah, they say something mutated, and then, you get the little... But this is the first time where he was like, I'm a mutant. And you're like, oh my goodness, what? My nips are hard. This is uncanny, Namor. Oh, side note, Namor, one of my favorite X-Men. I've got him on my X-Men wall. I love Namor. I'm a big slut for Namor. Just Namor content. I love him. So that's going to be a lot of my positives for this movie, even though I enjoy this movie overall, but Namor is the big draw for me. And obviously, comic connections, Riri Williams' story is pretty accurate. She was a college student. She's like, oh, I'm going to make an Iron Man suit because I'm super smart. And there you go. Like, it's pretty on brand. So overall, like, I would say this is a decently faithful movie to the comics. Aside from the origin of T'Challa Khan, what in the comics is called Atlantis, but I think the changes they made for this movie really, really strengthened that corner of the Marvel Universe for the context of the MCU, because, they were very careful to avoid just copying, Atlantis from the Aquaman film, and I think that worked to their favor. So, since we're done with these initial comic connections, I'm sure we'll have others, pop up as we're discussing the film, but Drew, We've touched on it a bit, but what were your general thoughts about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever?
I'm gonna admit, the first time I watched it, I was very confused on my feelings. I see the good writing, I also see the poor writing, I saw the tribute to Chadwick Boseman that, I'm gonna admit, made me cry. And then I saw also some stuff which I don't know if this was the best choice to make for the movie. But overall, I think overall I can say, this is probably the second best movie in Phase 4 for me.
And how many times did you say you've seen it so far?
I would say I've seen it twice.
Okay. I've only seen it the one time. But okay. Yeah, so but still, that's high praise. Second best in Phase 4. What's your number one for Phase 4 so far?
Number one, Shang-Chi.
Ah, okay. Well, I mean, understandable. The banger of a film. But no, I'm right there with you. I didn't full-on cry. It's rare that a movie gets me to cry. Like, this definitely, hit me in the moments where it needed to hit me, but, it's rare that a movie, gets me to tear up, and that's not me being like, oh, I'm so tough and, I'm so emotionally unavailable. It's more that I tend to only tear up by things when I get really excited or I think they're really cool. It's just sad things in general don't normally get me. I guess I'm just built different, guys. But that being said, this is a fantastic movie. The emotion is palpable throughout the film, both just in the dynamics between the characters as they are on the screen and in the script, as well as the emotion that you bring to the film, knowing everything that they went through to get this made, knowing that this is both within the context of the story and, in the real world, a tribute to, Chadwick Boseman / T'Challa. It's really surprising how well they were able to pull this together with everything they had overcome. And, there's plenty of things in this movie that are great. There's a few things that don't necessarily work. I know, and we talk about this a lot, especially with the MCU, and especially in Phase 4, how some things just seem to be super polarizing. There are a lot of people who are saying this is, one of the greatest MCU movies ever. There are a lot of people who are saying it sucks a bag of dicks. And, to that, I say just go touch some grass. It's not that deep, in the context of the, everything that's happened. Because in that sense, it is that deep. Like, it's a deep, emotional movie. I've seen a lot of people talk about its themes of dealing with loss and grief, which are very valid and very powerful. And then there's also a lot of talk about POC / indigenous solidarity, which I also think is a very valid theme to come away from this movie with. I think overall it's just, it's a good movie. Is it gonna, you know, did it necessarily blow me away? Not really, but I'll go ahead and say I enjoyed it more than the first one, for reasons we'll get into, I'm sure.
Okay, I can't wait to hear that. And I totally agree. This it's like the people who are like ragging on this movie saying it's like the worst thing ever. It's like, calm down. It's like, for one thing, I went into the movie kind of knowing that because of Chadwick Boseman's absence and because this is practically T'Challa's second death, it wasn't going to like be like this perfect story and everything. What I went in for was to see, like, are they going to try and keep it as narrowly consistent as possible? And how well are you going to respect Chadwick Boseman's legacy? And
so you went in with a somewhat, like, cautiously optimistic mindset?
Yeah, I was very optimistic, but I was also cautious because it's like a lot of stuff happened behind the scenes with this movie, and it all centers, like, well, not all, but most of it centers around Chadwick Boseman and the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, that's true. See, my mindset going into this movie was a little bit different than yours. Obviously, I wanted it to be good. I don't, you know, it's rare that I go anything wanting something to suck, and this was definitely not one of those instances. But I did go into it prepared to be a hater, because, and we talked about this years ago when the first Black Panther came out, and I guess we can just go ahead and, we're moving into the general spoiler talk now, everybody, so we've already, you know.
It means if you haven't seen the movie, get out.
Yeah, and we already talked about some spoilers, but, you know, this is a spoiler talk. You guys know what you're getting into. But into the actual meat of this. So Drew and I, you know, we talked about this when the first Black Panther came out because we were still in college at the time. I enjoy the first one well enough, but I felt like Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa, while Chadwick Boseman was always fantastic as T'Challa, he always delivered a standout performance, I felt he was somewhat underutilized in his own movie, where he was being used as sort of the bridge to introduce the audience to this whole new corner of the MCU and all these new cast of characters, which is understandable because he was literally, you know, introducing everyone to Wakanda. But my issue with that was, yeah, and the king. My issue with that was it felt like he didn't get as much to do in his own movie as I would have liked, and it felt almost like other characters were being elevated somewhat at his expense. Like, and don't get me wrong, all the side characters they introduced in the first movie are enjoyable, except, and this is part of why I wasn't looking for this, I didn't really care for Shuri just because I didn't find her very funny, and I didn't like they were leaning into that angle. And that was largely because of my biases from the comics, where anytime I'd read Shuri, she was more, you know, serious and not necessarily stoic, but she was more business like a brother. The only times I had ever really read her was she was already a Black Panther. So, you know, she wasn't cracking jokes like, what are those? And all that. And,
well, I, you know, well, and. Mind if I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, as someone who did read Shuri's first appearance, because she technically was a retcon into Black Panther's story.
Yeah, wasn't she in her first appearance? Wasn't it Reggie Hudlin's Black Panther origin?
Yeah. If you just FYI, for anyone who goes into Reggie Hudlin's Black Panther stuff, it's very divisive, and I can see why. And I can also see why.
I've read a bit of it.
Yeah, it's got some problems, but Shuri was not one of them. It's like she does crack jokes, and she's kind of a little more lighthearted. She's trying to prove that she can be Black Panther and everything, and she wants to live up to like the first female Black Panther, which is ironic because as we go through the history of the Black Panthers, it turns out there's a ton of female Black Panthers. So why her specifically is something that is just left to the wayside. But she just wants to prove herself. Yeah,
I mean, fair, but. Like I'm saying, like, that's just something I brought from my own biases, because that had been my only exposure to Shuri. Like, largely through the Hickman stuff that you mentioned, she does appear as the Black Panther. By then, she's already Queen of Wakanda, and, you know, T'Challa's King of the Dead. But even other characters, like, you know, and I don't want to seem like I'm just calling out that I don't like the women are getting more things than T'Challa, but like M'Baku and Killmonger, I didn't necessarily, more specifically Killmonger, who was Michael B. Jordan, obviously fantastic. He's a fan favorite, but like, I didn't like how, you know, the moment he took away the powers of the Black Panther, like T'Challa just got his shit kicked in. Like,
yeah, feels very un-T'Challa like.
It was very un-T'Challa like, and it felt like it's in that specific story, it felt like it was making T'Challa too reliant on the heart-shaped herb. And it boils down to this, really. A lot of the time, like Batman's the Dark Knight, Superman's the Man of Steel, one of the things they've called Black Panther is the most dangerous man alive, you know? Because he's one of the smartest people in the Marvel Universe. He's one of the most dangerous, like, fighters. Like, he's just the best of the best, even without the heart-shaped herb. And my main issue, if I had to boil it down, was that I never felt like T'Challa ever seemed like the most dangerous man alive, you know, even when he had the heart-shaped herb. It was just like, okay, like, he's here and he's a great guy, he's a good king, but it's just like, all right, it felt like he was more moving along with the plot to just keep it moving forward. It felt more like he was not necessarily a plot device, but he didn't have as much of an impact on his own film as I wanted him to. And I felt like it elevated the side characters almost at his expense. Like, we were spending so much time with them, and I'm like, okay, this is great, but like, I'm mainly here for T'Challa. So going into this movie, I was a bit hesitant because they're like, well, T'Challa was the main person I cared about. And, you know, for obvious reasons, I wasn't, you know, holding it against this movie. Clearly, like I said, we got to, you know, take things in context, but I was very aware of like, okay, well, how well am I going to enjoy this movie with, you know, without the main dude that I was there for, and with the new lead, Shuri, was someone who I didn't necessarily enjoy that character, you know, before. So I was a bit, we'll see. But then they say, oh, Namor's a villain. And I'm like, okay, well, really, as long as Namor's cool, I'm going to be excited, because I love Namor.
Fan favorite. You heard him earlier.
He's one of my favorite Marvel characters. I was like, okay, this is great. All the trailers, Namor looks dope. It's fantastic. They confirm he's a mutant. I'm like, great. This is like, they're going to say the word mutant. He's got the X-gene. It's all going to be good. So I go into this movie, and for the first few minutes, like, obviously when, you know, the funeral scene is super powerful and whatnot, it's like, okay, this hit me. My friend was with me. He was crying next to me. A lot of people in the theater were crying. I was like, all right, you know, this is a good, like, sort of send-off for this and the way they were processing this grief. And one of the things that I came away from this movie with, and this is part of why I think I enjoy it more than the first Black Panther, and some people may agree with me, some people may not, this is just what I got out of the movie. To me, it felt like T'Challa had more of an impact on this story than he did in the first one, and the way they honor his memory and the way he has such a presence in every scene, even though he's not actually in it, it elevated the side characters for me, who are now just the main characters, in a way that I felt that I personally connected with more than in the first movie. It made me like every character more. It made me feel for every character more. And I don't know if that's just because, you know, what I'm bringing in, you know, from a real world lens, understanding everything we went through, or if it's just part of the narrative. So yeah, it made me like all the side characters more, and as a villain, I like Namor way more than I like Killmonger. And I liked Killmonger. Killmonger's dope. Michael B. Jordan's dope. But come on, it's fucking Namor. Like, yeah, it's the Submariner, bro. Like, Imperius Rex. Namor is like one of my... He's tied for number one villain in the MCU. Well, number one antagonist in the MCU for me now, next to Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin. Like, come on. He was the GOAT. So yeah, I walked away from this movie and like, okay, I don't necessarily know if structurally I'd say it's better than the first movie, just because, you know, it's a much longer film. So some of the pacing, and I'm someone who loves long movies, but some of the pacing gets weird here and there. And then, you know, the third act kind of falls into what they were making fun of on She-Hulk. Just sort of a, you know, just, all right, we're big superhero fight now, and doesn't necessarily work in a lot of ways. And we'll get to that later, but overall, I think the themes and the performances really are what sealed the deal for me and made me really enjoy this more than the first film. Am I making sense with the why I was you know, not necessarily
yes.
super looking forward to this going into it, or am I just yes. rambling?
No, you know, you made sense. It's like every detail was important. It's like you talked about how Namor elevated it. Shuri was not your favorite. So it's like we got the general gist. So just FYI, while I did like Shuri in the original movie, I did feel everything that Tristan admitted, that a lot of characters were built up. So T'Challa was built down and everything. And one of the biggest things for me was Shuri had his genius. It felt like T'Challa was way more of a brawler in the Black Panther yeah. movie, and his intelligence from the comics.
I'd yeah. second that, yeah.
Yeah, his intelligence from the comics is just gone and everything. And it really was like just me like feeling like, hey, I wish they could elevate T'Challa. And then I heard like rumors like, oh, he's going to be doing that in the next movie. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then, of course, Chadwick died, and it was like okay, this movie is definitely gonna be changed and everything. When I heard like, okay, so you know, like they tried to keep the Black Panther, who's the new Black Panther secret, we all knew it was gonna be Shuri.
We all knew it was gonna be Shuri. They tried, but come on guys,
for me it's like Disney, stop trying to hide stuff that's gonna be obvious. It's like, just like say, oh, Shuri's the new Black Panther, because the only other two people who were legitimately could have been the Black Panthers were Nakia and M'Baku. I know Okoye was someone saying like she could have been the Black Panther, but I was like, nah, she's not. It's like she's great in her role as the supporting bodyguard. She, like, her character just could not be the main focus of it.
But see, her Okoye would make more, not to derail, but I think Okoye would make more sense than M'Baku, because M'Baku doesn't worship Bast. Like, they make that a whole point in the first movie. Like, having the Man-Ape become the Black Panther, which, you know, the whole him being Man-Ape in the comics is steeped in a whole, like, bunch of problematic tropes and whatnot, which is, you know, icky. But, it, you know, his tribe is, you know, they're ape-themed.
And that's one of the things where I thought it could have been interesting for a arc for him in Black Panther 2, because I remember telling you, it's like M'Baku was my favorite to be the Black Panther when they were deciding it, because in the end it would have to be him accepting the culture of the other tribes, and him accepting like the Black Panther role would have been like the culmination of that. Short story of it. Also, Winston Duke just kills it in the roles he's given. So
yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, so I also like had a bias for that. Plus, there was an artwork of him in the Black Panther suit that someone made, and it was like, okay, now I'm fully sold. But I kind of knew it wasn't going to happen, so whatever on that. But, to keep this as short as I can, going into this, I kind of expected Shuri to take on a lot of T'Challa's traits. I'm glad they kept her closer to who she is. She's not a combat expert in this at all. She's just trying her best.
Towards the end, yeah.
Towards the end, she gets a little too good with it, in my opinion. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, she's losing most of the time. So it's like, I can understand it. Just feels weird that she's able to keep up with Namor, who's been combating for 500 years. And she...
Well, that... Yeah, keeping up with Namor, 100%. Anybody keeping up with Namor, I'd be questioning it. But, I mean, and you've read her in the comics. Like, she also was trained from a young age, like,
yeah,
obviously, yeah, this is a living, comics, breathing world, so
yeah, yeah. Comic Shuri was, but it's like in the first movie, like they made this point that Shuri wasn't trained in combat and she preferred the sciences. So
when did they say she never trained in combat? She does get involved in the final fight, like, you know,
she does, but she
involves herself in the final fight in Endgame. Like, she knows how to fight.
Yeah, her fighting is more like Iron Man's fighting, where it's lasers from a distance. So it's not really like the martial arts stuff. It's more she uses her technology effectively, and I liked her like that, because she's supposed to be kind of like Tony, where she doesn't know how to fight, but she can use her technology very efficiently. So that was my thing. But it's like it doesn't really like affect me too much, because honestly, as one of the royal heirs, I expect her to know some way of fighting. It's
yeah,
just
that's
against
just
Namor, I didn't expect it. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, against Namor, you don't expect anybody to to be able to face him so handily.
Iron Man, Hulk, the heavy hitters, not really like
Namor would beat Iron Man's ass. Even in the comics, I'm like, Namor, stop playing around with them. Like Hulk, yeah, Hulk, Namor, and Hulk, that's a fight. But Iron Man, I'm like, they'd be putting people up against Iron Man. I'm like, y'all, this ain't fair. Like, what's Tony gonna do? Gonna hit him with a stapler? Come on.
To be honest, I think Tony is more high mid tier superhero, but at the same time, it's like it's Tony's like. So the thing is that they always give Tony a very OP weapon and then never let him have it for the next suit because he's being too powerful. So if he has his one of his OP weapons, Namor ain't standing a chance. But if he just has his regular suit, yeah, no, Namor's gonna kill. Yeah. And I mean kill. Namor doesn't play.
Oh, anymore. Yeah, no, Namor's gonna, you know, just spear him with his trident. But yeah, no, I get what you're saying with Shuri. But let's just go ahead and talk about this. We've touched on this in general. What were the standout performances for you?
Okay, so as I said before, Winston Duke as M'Baku was killing it, but I'm sorry, he only takes second place. Because the Queen, Ramonda Angela Bassett, was the show stealer. She really put this movie over her back and held it up like Atlas on those very Jesus powerful Christ. Arms.
Oh my god, those arms carved out of granite, forged in the heart of a dying sun, those arms.
And tempered with vibranium.
Oh my goodness, tempered with vibranium. Here's the thing, Angela Bassett, a fantastic actress, beautiful woman, by all accounts, a great person. But she's you know, a bit on the older side, you know, and she's still got arms cut like that. I'm a 25-year-old man. My arms will never look as good as hers.
Same.
And that's a fate that I've had to accept. But man, looking at her in this movie, I just live vicariously through her. Just those biceps, man, those shoulders, those delts. It was just incredible. It was just incredible. And to tell you what, the only thing stronger than her arms is her performance, as you're saying.
Mm-hmm. She is the standout performance for me. And honestly, I think a lot of other people say so too, because I've heard from friends and online discussion that she really is the best part of the movie for a lot of people. And I can honestly just fully agree. There's no downside. She really just executes her character with perfectness.
Nice choice of words.
Dang it. Should have thought more. Literally, like, Queen Ramonda is like the best character in this movie for me. And Angela Bassett is a huge part of that, but also like the writing for her is just amazing. Besides those two, I do have to give it to Letitia Wright as Shuri, because she had a bunch of emotional scenes as well. And Shuri, you really feel for Shuri through this movie and everything. And I think making her the titular character was not only an amazing choice, but it also really does show Letitia's acting range and everything, now that she's more than just the jokey character who will get serious when time comes.
And in that regard, it did make me like the Shuri character more than I was planning to, but I wouldn't say she was my standout. We already know. We already know Angela Bassett, number one standout, those arms. But actually, you know what? Number one standout, Angela Bassett. Number two and three tied, Angela Bassett's arms, because we gotta, we gotta respect the arms. They get their own section.
We gotta respect the arms. Each one gotta respect be a Black Panther in their own right.
Respect the arms. Put them in vibranium. But my overall favorite character, and someone who was a legitimate standout for me, which that's the thing. Angela Bassett, she's always going to be great. So it's like, damn, do I really want to count her as my standout? Because I'd be shocked. I've never seen that woman turn in a bad performance, you know? Like, she is just a masterclass of acting. But the standout that actually surprised me was Namor. Because I went in wanting to like Namor, went in wanting to love Namor, and I left loving Namor. But I just was not prepared for how damn good of a job Tenoch Huerta did as Namor. Like, he fucking crushed it for me. He was everything I wanted the character to be. He was cool. He was arrogant. He was powerful. He was menacing when he needed to be. Like, he really stole the show for me. I left the movie being like, God, when am I going to get a Namor movie?
So, ooh, you're going to hate me, Tristan, but,
Are you going to be a hater? You're going to be a hater on Namor? We got to throw.
I'm not going to be a hater on Namor. And it's not really the Namor character that I dislike. It's just the writing for him. I'm going to save the real in-depth thoughts until we get to, like, the stuff we did not like, but, I do need to say, Tanaka Huerta, I really hope I'm pronouncing that right. He really does a good job for the acting for Namor. I think the writing for Namor was a bit off, and I will get into my reasons why in the stuff we disliked. But overall, I still like the Namor character. Really loved it. And I also loved some of the Atlanteans that got to appear, like Atuma. Woo. I originally expected him to be the main villain of this.
I also expected him to be the main villain. Like, he was, like, going to be manipulating whatever. And it's like, oh, no, it's just Namor being a dick like Namor does. I'm like, cool. That works for me, yeah. I assume they're saving Atuma turning against Namor for a solo film or something.
Yeah, I honestly don't want to, just because, like, the physical acting that they did for him really, really got me invested. It's like, I love his rivalry with Okoye and everything, and I love how... he just, like, takes everything in stride. And he's like, hey, I kind of want to enjoy this. And he proves that he can hold up to it. It's like, you're not going to, like, take down Okoye like she's nothing. But it's like, the fact that he really did understand her fighting style that quickly and then showed off his superior strength and stuff, that really was a cool fight scene. It's one of my favorites.
It's a damn good fight scene. So here's what I'm saying. Normally, when we're talking about the meat of the film, we'll somewhat do a plot breakdown. I don't want to do that this time, because this is a movie, for whatever reason, that I feel like people should go see on their own. Like, obviously, we're going to talk spoilers and, you know, things we like, things we don't like, overall, you know, criticisms or critiques and positive things about the movie with spoilers. But I don't want to do the, oh, this happens and this happens and this happens. I want people to go see this movie and make up their own minds. But one thing I do want to talk about is Shuri's overall arc. How did you feel about it?
So, I feel like they were great moments. There were, and especially, like, it feels in-depth with her character. The fact that she's the girl who scoffed at tradition. She chose to just focus on what she can either tangibly see or what she can prove with science and everything. And the gods are not a part of that, so, and the ancestors and stuff. So, that's something that she has to work with. And then also her guilt and everything. Of not being able to save T'Challa and just her dealing with stuff, trying to close people out. It's all really good. I do feel like, though, there are times where they forget that she's going through that. And I think it's because, well, the scenes were originally written for T'Challa and they didn't rewrite them to be for a grieving Shuri.
So, I'm curious. What's this is not me trying to poke holes in it. I'm curious what do you have an example of that you were thinking of?
So, during the time with Riri, with not Riri, when they were looking at Riri's device and everything, and she's talking about it, saying how amazing it is. When she wants to go out in the field, it feels off, considering that we just got done with the scene where it's like, oh, you bury yourself in your lab and everything. And you don't want to leave and everything, and suddenly she's just gung-ho to go. It does feel a little weird. I get what they were trying to do. They were trying to say, oh, she found the technology very interesting. She wants to meet the person who opened it. It's just that that's really full contextual and goes against what we just saw with her her and her scene with her mom before, like, Namor showed up. So that's one of the scenes. But that's an example I have. But overall, I do think that her arc is pretty good. I think the problems I have with it was when she was starting to get the Black Panther powers, and there were some scenes where I was like, okay, it feels kind of like we're skipping a bit. But at the same time, it's like, I kind of just looked over it because the scenes where she got to fully express her anger, her hate, anger, her hatred, and the other stuff with a scene that should I talk about the cameo?
Yeah, I mean, this is, like we said, this is a spoiler talk. We're not doing a full, this happens. But yeah, we can talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah, like right after Michael B. Jordan showed up to her in the Ancestral Lands, really one of the best ways of showing how Shuri is falling, her reaction to that, and just the emotional range we get to see Shuri go through is just chef's kiss. That was perfect. It's great storytelling.
And see, so that like, was...
I, overall, love it.
Yeah. No, sorry, go ahead.
No, I that was it. I overall like it.
Yeah, and I agree. I also overall like it. I had a similar reaction to... I had a similar thing I wanted to call out with it not necessarily feeling entirely consistent, but it was actually the inverse. I had a thought relating to the Michael B. Jordan scene. Although I will say, at least in terms of like, oh, okay, like it felt like a change that she's ready to go out in the field and whatnot. When she was talking with her mother, I didn't necessarily take that as, oh, you're buried in your lab, like you never leave, you don't want to go anywhere. I took that more as she was just burying herself in the opportunity to do something that makes her feel useful. So when it is, hey, she wants to go talk to Riri, she wants to meet this person, that is something that she feels she can contribute. I didn't think it was a literalization of, oh yeah, no, you just are holed up in there like a hermit. And, you know, at least in terms of like in some scenes where she feels like so excited and whatnot and not like mourning, we got to remember, A, like this has been a year later. You know, a year has passed since T'Challa's death. And also, like, even when someone's grieving and it's fresh, like, people handle things in different ways. Sometimes they are going to bury things and just be jokey and whatnot because they don't want to actually, like, take a moment to think about what they've lost. And she does say that when she's like, I know I'm not going to burn this because if I do that, I'm going to burn the world. Like, if I stop to think about what he meant to me, like, we're going to have a fucking problem. So that all felt consistent with me. What did feel like a bit of a jump, and I appreciated where it ultimately ended up, and I liked it, you know, even as it was happening, but it was just like, this seems like it kind of came out of, not necessarily out of nowhere, but it felt like a quick jump. When Killmonger visits her in the Ancestral Plane, and it's like, okay, yeah, like, you know, you wanted vengeance, all that stuff, and she comes out like, she comes out of the plane angry and just ready to murder Namor, and it's like, that feels like little bit of a jump. Like, yeah, she did just lose her mom and she's like, this is the last person who really knew her, but they were playing with that rage as if it were something that she was consistently struggling with throughout the whole movie outside of the one throwaway line she has earlier of, oh, if I burn something, I'm gonna burn the world. And it's like, okay, just remember that for like an hour and a half later when she's angry now. You know, like that felt like, oh, okay, so we're going back to this. All right, great. And then, you know, when she is the Black Panther and when she is dealing with that rage, that's the most interesting I found her. And this is after I had already grown to like her more throughout the movie. So I'm not complaining about that. It just felt like a bit like while I was in the theater, I'm like, huh, okay, this feels like a little bit of a shift, but I'm on board.
Like, I can understand that interpretation as well. And yeah, you're right. People grieve in different ways. And there's various different ways to see Shuri's journey and everything, which I guess was one of the points that they were going for.
No. That's true. But overall, you know, I'd say we both liked, you know, Shuri's arc. But Shuri was not the only major presence in the movie, the only major character. We talked a lot about the supporting cast with the standout performances, but I really want to talk about Namor in this movie. I want to get into you know, some of the issues you've had with him and that could lead us into what we think didn't work. But I also want to talk about the way they adapted Namor's people, Talokan in this movie, but Atlantis in the comics. So, Drew, why don't you just have at it? What are you thinking with Namor?
For one thing, he's very close to what he's got in the comics, and in truth, I honestly think he's done a little better than what he is in the comics. Because I've never thought of using Namor's wings as like things to help propel him in the water, or also to switch to a dragonfly like flapping for in the air and everything. And it's like, not only is that brilliant to show like how it helps him swim and fly, but it's like it allows him for quicker movements than what he normally does in like other appearances, like in animated appearances, because
they definitely adapt his powers in a very cool way, like you're saying, just with the way he flies in this is not like any other way we've seen someone fly, even just in the MCU. The one thing I would compare it to would be like the final fight in Man of Steel between Superman and Zod, how they're zipping back and forth. But even then, it feels almost like in some scenes it feels like Namor's soaring through the air the way Shadow the Hedgehog kind of like skates, you know?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah, I got that feeling as well. And I even made a joke with my friend. It's like, well, we know how Shadow's going to be for Sonic 3.
There you go.
Yeah, but I think the biggest thing is that I didn't really feel threatened by this Namor.
Really?
It's so weird because like it's like you get it. You're supposed to like also empathize with him as well. But it's like, you know, it's like one of the things that has been consistent with me on Namor, and he's one of the characters I love to hate just because he'll flip his allegiances on a dime if he believes it'll benefit him or Atlantis. But one of the things that I just did not feel was that you aren't really that threatening to me. It's like, and don't get me wrong, like, Tanakh really does know how to act. Like, I've seen him in The Forever Purge and Sons of Monarchs, and it's like, he can look threatening. Just he didn't feel it here.
That's for him not feeling intimidating, man. I could not disagree more. Like, I mean, his first scene, he just murders Lake Bell. Eats her into the ocean with a, you know, but grabs the helicopter, just throws down. And even like his scenes with specifically his scene with Queen Ramonda, like while Nakia's rescuing Shuri, when she's like, "Oh, and what'll happen if you don't?" And he just leans and he's like, "Oh, I'll kill you." And you're like, yeah, he fucking will. He means it. Like, he'll do it. And then what does he do? He fucking kills her, and he has that badass line of, you know, bury your dead, mourn your losses. I'll be back in a week. You know, you're the queen now. It's like, shit. All right, Namor, like, fucking, he said what he meant. And yeah, he followed up on his word.
Yeah, that's one of the things you'll always get from Namor. Like, that's one of my favorite things about Namor, because sometimes he can get his comeuppance for trying to be so smug all the time, but it's like, he will do what he says. It's like, if he says, yeah, I'm coming for your people and everything, oh, he's gonna do it. He's gonna do it.
If he makes a threat, you can be damn well sure he's at least going to attempt to carry it out.
Yeah. Now, one thing I will say, making Namor Aztec was brilliant.
So Aztec or Mayan? I feel like we don't want to mix this up. Let's say Mesoamerican.
Mesoamerican. Technically, it's both, because I see like the architecture is from both. I can recognize some of it, but it's like at the same time, it's like I'm just gonna say Mesoamerican.
Well, still, I don't want us to say the wrong thing, and you know,
yeah. So
offend anybody.
So, but making him Mesoamerican was honestly freaking brilliant. I love associating him with Quetzalcoatl, the winged serpent. It's like fits him so well. It's like, oh, it's so good. And I love the designs that they give him, like the feathered helmet and everything. Oh, it's just so good. And I was so into it even when like they first announced it. I was like, that's honestly epic. I love it. It's like, I couldn't wait to, like, see it on screen, and it did not disappoint, and I love it so much. I keep saying I love it, but it's really so good.
It's one of the best decisions they made with this movie.
Yeah.
And that's not taking anything away from the rest of the movie. Like, when you see the movie, the way they introduce not just Namor, but the people of Talokan, like, the history, you know, that scene where he's giving all the exposition to Shuri, like, it's a great scene, and it feels like, oh, okay, like, shit, yeah, I see how this has been a thing in the MCU for so long without anybody knowing. Like, it feels more human and more empathetic just in general, like why you would feel for Namor and his people. You're like, okay, yeah, like, no, like, we don't want them to get wiped out or anything. Like, you get why Namor's like, no, I'm going to protect my people at any cost. My only gripe with how it was adapted was I just wish they'd made some reference similar to how in Black Panther Claw refers to Wakanda as like, oh, that's the real El Dorado. Like, I would have liked a fun nod to be like, oh, you know, there'd been rumors of this place, and like, and even Namor saying like, oh, for, you know, we've been around for hundreds of years, like, some people thought we were Atlantis, like, some type of fun nod to the comics, you know, that they're Atlantis in the comics. But overall, yeah, like, I agree, I really enjoyed the way they adapted that whole, you know, culture.
Yeah, it really is like an amazing thing to, like, not only view, but also, like, a way of introducing it into the MCU and making it feel like it could have been here all this time. Because I feel like Phase 4 does a problem with, oh, they were here all this time, and it's like, how have we not come across this?
Yeah. Whereas this is literally like, well, this is how you haven't come across it, because they've purposely been like, nobody come near us. Yeah. So that's something that we can agree did work. So let's go ahead and get into, Drew, what is it that you think didn't work? Because you've touched on a few things that you wanted to dive into. So what are we getting into right now?
Okay, so I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but it's Riri. And it's not that I dislike Riri, the character, the actress, anything. Honestly, I think they did well. I feel, though, that she's kind of redundant and pushed in.
Feels a bit shoehorned in.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, for one thing, how did you, it's like, okay, this one is for the, like, one problem with her from the writing standpoint. How did you make something that can track vibranium without knowing how vibranium is in any way? It's not like it's not like we hear, like, oh, I got a piece of vibranium from, like, this underground dealer and everything when I was doing stuff. Because that would also, like, have some negative connotations for Riri. But it's like, I keep wondering, it's like, how did you make a vibranium tracker not knowing how vibranium is affected in any way? And also,
I mean, that is, real quick, that is a very valid question. My only get, and this is, you know, us doing the work of the movie and trying to figure out how, like, she is a student at MIT. Of all the universities in the United States, it's not necessarily unfathomable to think maybe they've got records of samples or, you know, the properties of vibranium just to study, because it is MIT. But yeah, like, that is us doing the work of the script.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. The other thing is that she's technically Shuri. She's Shuri from the first movie, just Americanized. And it's like, having Shuri still around and interacting with her, like, it feels like they're filling out nearly the same role almost. And it's like, okay, I get it. We need to set up Riri for our Young Avengers champions, whichever one it's going to be. I'm hoping it's Young Avengers, cause it's practically the Young Avengers lineup with a few changes. But it's like, again, she kind of feels shoehorned in, and like Wakanda, who has just stated that, hey, we're not going to like give you guys our resources and everything. Wakanda is still like off limits and everything. Actually, not their resources, their vibranium. Like, they didn't say like they didn't share their resources. They said they didn't share their vibranium, which is what the world really wants. But it's like, after all that, they're going to risk going to war with this other nation who states that they can threatened them over not a Wakandan, but an American girl. It does feel a bit weird. I'm not saying, like, it's not possible. It just still feels a bit weird. And that's really, like, my whole thing with Riri. Because, again, she is enjoyable. And there are some things where I feel like, okay, you're kind of pushing a little bit. But I still like her as a character. Her Iron Man suit and her being able to go up into the atmosphere after, like, you know, first Iron Man, Tony had to have a fully covered suit because of the icing problem, and she has none of that problem, feels a bit weird. And I wouldn't have noticed that, except for the fact that the scene was a homage to that scene, so.
I can see where you're coming from with Riri. I think the actress did great, and I enjoyed the character overall, but
yeah, I can't wait to see more of her.
Yeah, same. I'm looking forward to the Ironheart series. But, I mean, she was one of the things where it's like, okay, does she really need to be here? Like, this kind of could have just been any scientist. And I get they are, you know, introducing her and setting her up for her own series, and she had great moments and good chemistry with everyone. But when the movie is almost 3 hours long, it's like, okay, like we don't, this is kind of going on. The same way with, you know, we all enjoy Martin Freeman. He didn't really need to be in this movie. We didn't need just all that stuff with, and I enjoy Julia Louis-Dreyfus, but it's like, a lot of their little subplot going on that kind of just ends, you know. Yeah. It's just like, okay, this is just done now. He's going to prison, and then at the end we remember to break him out. Like, what is this? Why is this? You're detracting. You're taking away time from Namor, guys. You're taking away time from Talakon. I want to see Namor. I don't care about Bilbo and you know, and I can't think, and Veep. It took me a second to think of a Julia Louis-Dreyfus reference, but. There you go.
Yeah, I do admit, her character is getting on my nerves. I get it, they're trying to set up the fact that it's about to be, like, the Dark Avengers and, all that stuff, but it's like, you kind of...
Thunderbolts.
The Thunderbolts and also, the Dark Avengers, because they're apparently setting up Secret Invasion, and apparently that's going to lead into the dark side of the MCU and stuff.
I mean, hey, if they want to make Norman Osborn the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., like they want to turn to Hammer, bring back Willem Dafoe. It's fine. He'll do it.
Honestly, we kind of need a No More Mutants or some sort of reality bending stuff, so that way characters that didn't exist can exist now. I feel like they should have done that for the
X-Men. Wanda shows up. More Norman Osborn.
More Norman Osborn. He was great in that movie.
He was fantastic. I'm trying to think. What was something else that didn't necessarily work for me? This is two things. Two things, because overall I enjoyed it, and we talked just generally about the pacing. That's kind of one thing that didn't necessarily work for me, and I know this is just a personal choice, you know, based on taste. I feel like Shuri's Black Panther suit a little too overdesigned, too much gold and silver on it for me. Like, it still looked cool, but it didn't. I was like, all right, we don't need all this. Like, this just feels really complicated.
Yeah, and like in the commercials, I think they had less on it in the commercials. I might be wrong. But it felt like it was more like it was less designed when it was first shown in the commercials. And it was really cool, in my opinion, there, because it allowed for us to know, like, hey, this is like her design. It's her suit. She's making it in reference to her brother. And I think the golden accents missing in it were because they didn't want to, like, spoil Killmonger being in the show, in the movie.
Pick gold or silver. That's the thing for me. Where it's like, okay, like, yes, T'Challa's suit just had the silver on it. Killmonger's got the gold on it. In the comics, he's had, you know, Black Panther's had gold accents or silver accents. But having too many things on there, it detracts from the overall simplicity of the suit, which is one of the things that's so cool about the Black Panther suit, is that it just looks like a silhouette with these dope accents. So it's like, all right, had she gone with just gold or silver, I think visually that would have worked better for me. But, you know, that's just me being a stickler for visuals. The other thing that I was like, this is not working, the third act, I enjoyed it overall, like specifically just the Namor moments. But Shuri's supposed to be one of the smartest people in the MCU. I think she said she is the smartest person, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they have said, like, she is the smartest person, and with Tony dead, I can see that now.
Yeah, and, you know, clearly she's blinded by rage and vengeance. Why was their plan to attack the natives of Talakon in the water? Because... I mean, yeah, they got their big fucking sea leopard ship. Great. Okay, we're going to get Namor to the desert. Dope. I guess you got to go get Namor out of the water to get into the desert. But really, like, is she aware? Like, I wish we'd have gotten some moment where she was, like, consciously saying, like, yeah, I'm sacrificing these people to get to Namor. Because that's really what she was doing. By the end of the fight, you got, like, five Wakandans left, and it's just the main characters. Like, oh, and then you get the cool moments where Okoye's fighting, you know, Atuma, and Riri's fighting Namora. Oh, like, how are we beat them? We're gonna punch them off the ship. You mean into the water? The thing that strengthens them?
Yeah, that was the thing that got me with a lot of their fighting, because M'Baku, when he was going to face the Atlanteans, his idea was not to knock him out, throw him back in the water, and I'm like,
lead him into the ocean! You know, their source of strength.
It's just so weird.
It was weird. It was weird. And all the fight choreography was good for the most part. Like, then the third act, a little questionable, but all throughout the film, we haven't touched on this. When there were fights, the action was dope. Like, it was really good. But
yeah,
towards the end here, especially when you get like the Midnight Angel suit and Riri's suit, which I like the designs. I like Riri's suit well enough. I think it looks fine from production value. I would have preferred something closer to the comics, but whatever. The Midnight Angel suit, I think they did a great job adapting, but the helmet just looked weird in live action.
The helmets will always look weird in live action. And that's one of the things why I think they constantly like had her take away the mask and everything, because it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work in live action, and it looks weird. So yeah, they definitely something that should have been changed or redesigned instead of trying to be too faithful. And that's one of the things I will give the MCU. It's like, if they need to redesign the suit, go ahead and redesign it. I actually disagree with you on Riri's suit, because I kept thinking like, oh my god, she's the new Red Power Ranger.
It did look like a Red Power Ranger, but I'm like, you know what? I honestly found it seemed, at least in my eyes, it looked more practical than a lot of the Iron Man suits we've gotten lately. Like, it seemed more tactile. It seemed like you could touch it. And I just appreciated that, because I'm so tired of seeing all the CGI Iron Man suits. Like, it felt more like an actual suit instead of just, oh, it's a cartoon. You know, especially towards, like, Infinity War and Endgame, it's like, okay, that just looks like a cartoon person, like, running around. This is like, okay, this is someone in a suit.
Yeah. And yeah, and it even feels kind of like a mecha too, so it's kind of nice from that standpoint. One question I do have though, did she make an arc reactor?
It seemed like she was making an arc reactor, like in her garage, like there were schematics for it or whatever.
Yeah, it looked like that that was what she was using to power her suit, but it had a different shape to it to be more like the Ironheart heart. So that's a thing that kind of got me. It's like she created an arc reactor. It's like,
hey man, Ray Rams, smart as shit.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you're introducing this very smart character after all these other smart characters doing their stuff and everything, and it's like, it's kind of like that discrepancy I have with like introducing someone who's supposed to be able to do all this stuff at an early age, and there's like no explanation besides, oh, they're just quirky like that. It's like, I never liked those characters. Even as me as an anime fan, I don't like those characters.
Well, see, and I think the reason why, like, them just saying, oh, she's a genius and a prodigy, that's fine. Like, when they're like, oh, she's the only one who can build, I was like, great. I think the reason why you're probably getting hung up on the arc reactor, and this is something that now that I'm thinking about it has kind of just happened in the whole MCU at large. Right when the MCU started, the arc reactor, that was like the pinnacle of technology, right? Like, everyone's like, oh, especially in Iron Man 2, it was a whole thing like, oh, we can't replicate this arc reactor. Like, Tony Stark was able to build this in a cave. Like, that was the end all be all.
And then in Iron Man 2, Ivan like got he needed the schematics in order to like build the arc reactor. So
yeah, he got that from his dad. So it's like, okay, now we're starting to see this arms race. I think because, especially in the Black Panther movies, it's like the main technology is always just vibranium. That's what we're so concerned about, that you don't necessarily register, oh wait, she also built an arc reactor. That's pretty cool. Because now vibranium has sort of taken over the MCU. It was like, this is the technology we gotta think about. Everyone's got vibranium, whatever. It's like, okay, but arc reactors, those are still pretty cool, right? Like, you don't necessarily think about it.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. It's like, honestly, the more I keep thinking about it, there were a few problems I had with Riri's stuff that isn't directly tied to Riri itself. It's just what they make her do. Like, with the crash drone and the police barricade and the obvious
those cops were of those dead. Cops. Those cops, no, they were dead. I leaned over in front and was like, those cops are dead, bro. Like,
yeah.
They were about as dead as in Batman v Superman when Zack Snyder was like, oh, Batman didn't necessarily kill anyone. He just blew up the cars and maybe they were near him, but you know, that's kind of on them. It's like, no.
He tore they were blown the trailer up. That a guy was standing
in. Yeah, it's like he blew up those guard cars. Riri blew up those cop cars. Like, there's blood on her hands.
Yeah.
Like, at that point, I'm surprised Wakanda sent her back, because I would be shocked if she wasn't being investigated for, like, at least assault on an officer.
Yeah, it's like, there's no way you can just say she has, like, diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, anything. No, that was a lot. Trying to think, anything else that didn't work before we just start talking about our favorite moments and then wrap up?
One other thing. Again, this is the technology.
What's one for you?
So in the final fight with the crashed ship and everything, so one of the things that's been shown is that Wakanda doesn't use gasoline. So they use vibranium, and that's their energy source as well and stuff. So where did those flames come from? From the jet burner of the ship? It's like, I thought you specifically retrofitted it with just heaters. If you had a flamethrower, why did you never use it, Shuri?
Well, I don't know, it felt less like a flamethrower and more like, no, that's a good point, because the ship doesn't blow up because they fly away on it.
Mm-hmm. And it's specifically shown to be running on vibranium. Like, that's how Namor is able to blow it up in the first place.
Huh. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, think about it. I'll be honest, my main takeaway from that scene was me just going, because Namor said Imperius Rex, and I didn't think he was going to say it, and I was like, oh my god, he said it! And then Shuri's like, Wakanda forever, and I'm like, Shuri, I don't care about this right now. He just said Imperius Rex. Like, no slogan is going to top that in the MCU, I'm sorry. In the MCU will top me hearing Namor say, you know, he said it not in, you know, Latin or English or whatever,
in Mesoamerican.
Yeah, he said it in a language I don't understand, but he said Imperius Rex. No verbalization or onomatopoeia will top that until I hear, like, Snicked or Banff in the MCU. Until then, this is top sound, like, that's that. So her coming in with a Wakanda firm, like, great, touching. I'm sorry. Just win the fight, because he's already won the battle in my heart. Yeah, so I was like, oh man, pro Namor. I'm not saying Namor was justified, but Namor was more justified than, you know, people might think. Just saying, they came into his land, they killed his fucking people. Nakia went too hard. It's like, ma'am, you couldn't set that thing to stun? You just committed murder, you started a war. And I love Lupita Nyong'o. I think she was great in this movie. We didn't talk about Nakia a lot. She's fantastic in this movie. Everything they have her do was great. But it's like, damn, queen. Like, should have set it to stun.
Should have set it to stun. You just reminded me, because I almost did forget about this. T'Challa Jr.
You thought that was out of nowhere? I thought that was pretty on brand. I knew that was coming.
When they, like, introduced him, it was like, say, oh, like, T'Challa had a son and we kept him secret and everything. And I was like, really? It's like, after T'Challa died and everything, and the royal family is now down to two. One of which is, like, I think 19 in this movie? I'm not sure Shuri's age anymore, because I know she blipped out.
Well, wasn't she 15? Or 16.
15 or 16 in the first Black Panther. Then Infinity War, I think they said that she was 17, so I think it happened a year after. She would have been 17.
Well, because isn't she supposed to be... I think she's supposed to be the same age as Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And so, Peter's at least 18 now, by the time of this movie. So she's, at most, she's early 20s. But, you know, she's probably around 19. That's a 19 or 20 range.
Yeah, it's like...
She's at least college student age, because she said she'd be able to blend in at MIT.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay. But, T'Challa Jr. just came out of freaking nowhere for me. And I was like, okay, like, I don't believe it. I don't believe T'Challa would keep him away from the throne. It doesn't fit with his personality at all. It would fit with comic T'Challa, because he would want the guy to learn how to be with people who were also, like, non-royal and everything, because that was T'Challa's thing. He realized during his roundabout, when he went about learning from these different colleges and everything, he always took everything from a royal point of perspective, and the walkabout is supposed to teach you how to go about it from a commoner's point of perspective, to, like, be every day with the people and everything, so that way he can see it from multiple point of views. They never say that this T'Challa goes through it, so I just don't feel like this T'Challa goes through it. This T'Challa would do it.
I mean, I wasn't surprised by it, because there had been rumors that, like, she was going to have his kid. Like, I'd seen those a while, so I was like, oh, okay, that's probably going to happen. And then it happened, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, there you go. And it's like, oh, he didn't want to be around the pressures of the crown. I'm like, that tracks. Like, you know, this seems stressful, especially now that they've more or less open, well, not all the way open to Wakanda's borders, but now that they've like announced themselves to the world and, you know, all these threats to the royal family and whatnot, it's like, you know, that, and honestly, it's justified. Had he been in the capital when Namor decided to just flood shit, like, you know, he could have been killed. Yeah, so,
possibly would have been, possibly it worked been for killed, me. But he could have been in like his room or something. Like, we could have finessed that. But yeah, that's all I really have. It's like the other stuff I have problems with aren't really like problem. It's just like, why hasn't this been introduced yet? Like Bast.
They introduced Bast in the first movie.
They introduce Bast the concept, not Bast the actual goddess. She hasn't appeared
well,
yet.
They introduced her in Thor Love and Thunder.
Huh?
I mean, they have Bast in Thor Love and Thunder, but she doesn't appear in this movie either. Like, I don't know.
Does she? Because I didn't see her in Thor Love and Thunder.
In Thor Love and Thunder. She's just one of the gods in the audience.
I have to rewatch that scene now. But I need to look at that because...
Wait, so what's your issue with her in this movie? She's not...
That she doesn't appear. Like, in like Shuri's whole thing is like she doesn't believe in that stuff. And then, like, okay, Bast appearing would have been like a really good moment. And just because, like, we didn't get to see it for T'Challa... And that's not a play on the first movie because, of course, it was focused on other stuff. But it's like I just wanted to see Bast.
Well, for her, that was but for Shuri, like accepting the spirituality of it, that was her going to the ancestral plane at all. She didn't think the ancestral plane exists either. So once that was a thing, she was like, "Oh, okay, well, I may have been mistaken." And then when her mom appears at the end and says, "You know, show him who you are," it's like, "Oh, okay, no, like Shuri's more." In touch with us now. I don't necessarily think she's going to be, you know, like super duper devout, but it doesn't seem like she's doubting it anymore. I don't know. The best thing like I didn't think twice about.
Yeah. Like I said, it's not something I hold against the movie. It's just something I wanted in it. And like the other thing, like I was going to bring up was like, we don't know if Wakanda finally got their Starbucks.
That's a good question. Did they get their Starbucks? Go for some Starbucks. Go for a pumpkin spice latte.
All right.
So before we wrap up though, What would you say are some of your favorite moments?
Favorite moments, like I said, the T'Challa scenes where we got to see like people like grieve for him and everything. Those were like really the standout scenes of the movie for me, and just because they're mixed with something that's so real and so recent. I really do, like I said, I love the fight scene between Atuma and Okoye. The first one, like the second one is cool and everything, but I just can't get over that suit. But I do love the first one, everything, and Okoye really showing off why she is the head of the Dora Milaje. You go, Okoye. I love it.
Well, former head now.
former head. Jesus. I really think like she should have just been reinstated. Like Shuri just... Like, Shuri's technically was the queen, so shouldn't she...
I mean, hey, it's like what Loki says in the first Thor movie. The first act of the new king can't be to undo the final act of the last one, you know?
See, that was more Loki just being a dick. That was more Loki being a dick. But I do love Angela Bassett's scene with the rest of the world and everything. And it's like, we do not keep vibranium from you. From you because we fear its potential. We fear your potential. And it's like, oh, great line, great scene.
Great line.
One of the standout scenes for me. And the other one was, and this is kind of a little disrespect to your boy, Tristan, but I do love that Shuri is actually tactile and goes for the feather, goes for the wings on his feet to keep him from moving so fast.
It was a good moment. It was a good moment. I was like, damn. Hater. I was like, you're a hater. You can't let a man fly. But, you know, it's fine. He's a mutant. He'll heal. Put him in the... Dip him in the water. Yeah. That wing will be back by a solo movie. It's all...
Yeah, it's like everyone life. Has a healing factor. Yeah.
Especially if you're a mutant. Has one now. Oh, my God. If you're a mutant, oh, my goodness. Come on. He's gonna be just fine. No, it was a good moment. It was a good fight. I'd say my favorite moments... Pretty much any time Namor's on screen, I'll be honest, is probably going to be on my list. So you just take that as a given, that I just love everything he does. I especially love, I mentioned earlier, the scene where he threatens Romani, just like, oh, I'll kill you. I'm like, Jesus, hard as fuck. I love the... Cold-blooded. I love the invasion of Wakanda scene where they're just flooding the streets, and it's like you see Namor zipping around and he's just tearing through these planes, and just, and he punches the shit out of M'Baku, who tried to square up on him. He's like, nah, M'Baku, this is not about to go the way you think, and he just punches through his chest piece. I really like the scene where Shuri just drops down as the Black Panther, and it's like she gives her a little speech. But then you have that quiet moment with her and M'Baku, and he's like, nah, come on, we don't need to do this. And she's like, oh, I'm in charge. You're going to do what I say. And it's like, damn, all right, Shuri, shit. Like, she's going off the deep end a little bit now.
Going off the deep end, and it's really good that they put it with M'Baku, someone who feared this from the Panther, but also, like, the fact that he now knows the royal family and knows what Shuri is going through. He knows that this isn't her, so it's like, I really love that they make that scene so complicated for him and her.
And I would also say my other favorite moment is the scene where Ramonda strips Okoye of her title as general. That was, I think, my favorite scene with Angela Bassett. Like, she fucking crushed it. Like, it was great. And it was valid, because it was like, yeah, no, like, I didn't forget that all of you sided with Killmonger. Like, I took her back, you know, and now she went in and got my daughter lost. Like, get the hell out of here. It's like, yeah, you know, it's, you know, you wish Okoye would be reinstated. But in that moment where Ramonda's, like, essentially grieving all over again and is terrified, like, yeah, she's going to be thinking with her feelings. Like, yeah, get the fuck out of here. Like, you fucked up, bro.
Yeah. And it's the one scene also I don't like for M'Baku, for him to, like, right after when he's with the other of his tribe, he's like, maybe he'll reward Nakia with banishment. And I'm like, okay, M'Baku, she was not only was she grieving, but she's also she was also against her daughter going in the first place, and she did fail. So
it was a funny line, though. It did make me chuckle.
It was a funny line and everything. And I love M'Baku. Like, really, they make M'Baku too likable for me, because I really
he's a likable guy.
I know, like, at the ending, like, we now, he's probably going to be king and stuff, which I'm all for.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
interesting, we'll say.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like, man, they make him too charismatic, because, again, I really want to see him just be the main character of one of these movies now.
Hey, maybe he'll get a Disney Plus spinoff. But
maybe.
That's a question for the future. As of right now, we're about to wrap up. So, Drew, let's go over our final pros and cons for Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. What are you thinking?
Cons, Riri should have been written out. I really don't want to say that, because she is enjoyable in this movie. It's just, she's very shoehorned into it, and it just takes away from the movie and honestly makes it longer. Namor, like, wanting to kill the scientist, even though like the United States probably has the schematics for the machine, is a little weird to me, but overall it's like, I get where he's coming from, and it seems like his people aren't really, like, technologically on the same style as the rest of the world. Like, his like, it's not,
I mean, they have an underwater sun, so
yeah, they've been underwater and everything, and that's like, maybe they have computers and stuff, we don't see that, but it's like, I do feel like they should, because, you know, they have all this other stuff that seems like technologically advanced. It's just they use a certain type of technology, if that makes any sense. The final con I have is just, like I said, I didn't feel threatened by this Namor, but that's just me. It seems like Tristan here was very threatened, and also impressed by this Namor. And I still find this Namor impressive. I still find this Namor impressive. I just wasn't threatened by him. But yeah, hopefully that changes for me in the future, because Namor needs to have that intimidation factor.
I mean, hey, hashtag Namor was right, you know.
What was he, though? He wanted to burn the world because of the potential. It's like, you know, that's a big thing. But pros, Angela Bassett playing the queen. We got freaking M'Baku played by Winston Duke. That was both of them were awesome. I loved bringing back some of the older characters who I didn't think were actually going to make an appearance. Like, I didn't know if Okoye was going to be in this. So I did like her coming back. I'm trying to think of more than just Angela Bassett scenes. She's taking over my mind, man.
She, I'll tell you what, she's a powerhouse.
Yeah. I love the Chadwick Boseman keeping him in our hearts and making it like this nice goodbye to him in this movie. And I do also like some of Wakanda's technology jumps and everything. I really do like the electric daggers and stuff. So yeah, I think that's where I'm gonna end it off for my pros and cons. Otherwise, I'm gonna be here all day.
Well, there you go. For me, cons, some of the subplots, like with Riri and Everett Ross, I was like, all right, this is kind of weighing us down. And also, con, the end fight, at least with the segment where it's, you know, the sea leopard ship on the water. I'm like, this doesn't make a lot of sense.
It feels so weird and against Shuri's tactical mind.
Against her tactical mind and scientific mind, and against the tactical mind of literally any other of the major fighters and major characters. But, you know, whatever. Pros, I think the whole cast really just put their heart and soul into this, and it's clear. I think this movie is an excellent tribute / send-off to Chadwick Boseman and T'Challa, and man, I fucking love Namor. That's my main pro, I'll be honest. You know, sentimental reasons aside, God, I fucking love Namor. So yeah, general thoughts. It's a good movie. I liked it. I enjoyed it more than the first one. Like I said, I don't know if I can structurally say it's better than the first one, but it's higher on my personal list. So yeah. But Drew, now it's time to ask the most important question, I think, or at least one of the most important questions, because, you know, we both like attention. What are we working on, and where can people find us? So, Drew, what are you working on, and where can people find you?
So, I am going to get back into my YouTube channel. Gonna have some of the stuff that should have come out beforehand, before I had all that stuff, and then my teeth coming out, because finally getting able to talk about my scars hurting. So that's cool. But I do have to say, it probably won't come out to December because Thanksgiving's coming up and I like to relax around that time, because it's the one time of the year I feel like I can relax, because Christmas is a whole bag of worms with trying to buy presents and stuff. Or just dealing with family. But yeah, you can find my YouTube channel at Fanfic World on YouTube. Just look for it under Drew Garrison. You guys will be able to find it. And still doing the edits on my book and everything, so that'll probably come out in December as well. If not come out, then it'll be January. But yeah, so look me up.
There you go. Look him up, everybody. As for me, you can look up my work over on Screen Rant, and you can find me on all the socials. That includes Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at BackIssueBens. Now, if you're also looking things up, you might as well look up our Discord for the Nerd Stash. It'll be in the link, or the link will be in the description of this episode, wherever you're listening to. Come on, join the Discord. We got a lot of things to talk about. We got to talk about Wakanda Forever. We got to talk about whether or not Namor was intimidating.
I think he was.
We got to talk about Angela Bassett's arms. Like, you know, these are major conversation pieces, and we need to have conversations about them. So hop on in, give us a hashtag Bassett arms, and let us know that you guys are here to party. But before you click on that link to the Discord in, you know, whatever service you're listening to, why don't you also leave us a rating? Give us a like, you know, preferably something positive. If it's not positive, I'm not going to acknowledge it. I leave that to other people because I just refuse to acknowledge, you know, negativity. I don't need the negativity in my life, you know, it's a part of a journey I'm on. But
Hi, I'm one of other people, by the way.
There you go. He's one of the other people. I just let Drew deal with the negativity. It's how our relationship works. I make him do all the stuff I don't want to do. But speaking of things you do want to do, if you love video games and you're looking for another podcast to listen to, you may want to check out our gaming podcast called Power Up and Game. On that podcast, we go over some of the trending news stories around the gaming industry. And on occasion, we also have deep dive discussions about specific games, which are essentially just reviews, but we don't really like to call them that because that sounds too stuck up and stodgy. And finally, you should definitely check out the nerdstash.com. We've got all the latest about movies, TV, games, comics, tech. I mean, it really is a nerd stash. We got some really talented writers over there. So everyone, please go check them out. But I'd like to thank Drew for joining me. I'd like to thank anybody for listening in. Next week, Drew's picking the movie or series that we're covering. Drew, tell us what you're picking and why.
I chose Batman Superman Apocalypse, and it is one of my favorite animated movies. It is very faithful to its comic count for its comic source, and originally I was going to pick All-Star Superman, but Taylor will not be joining us, which is who I really want to see react to All-Star Superman, because he is one of the people I know will never have seen it.
Oh, man. I'd be shocked. I would pay somebody money. I guess I'd make a bet, I guess is the expression I'm looking for. I would bet that Taylor has not seen that movie, but I digress. So after, you know, we have a blast, just me and Drew talking about Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, the following episode we'll be discussing my long-hyped top 52 movies list. So everyone has that to look forward to as well. Is Superman, Batman, Apocalypse on that list? No, but it's a really good movie, and we're going to have fun talking about it. So until then, y'all have a good week.